You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Tuesday, December 19th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, journalist David Dayan, author of Chain of Title. What? On the soon-to-be-passed tax bill. I'm going to look back at 2017 as these are the final days of our live shows of 2017. Also on the program, that very same GOP tax scam, now with the Corker kickback, heads to both chambers floors today in the House to get a vote. Senate vote will come tomorrow. Meanwhile, Puerto Rico, still debilitated, now set to be victimized by the banks. One of the tax scam highlights, 13 million less insured people. Also, we are potentially just 4 days out from a government shutdown. The Mueller probe, either set to be shut down by Trump over the next 2 weeks, or could go through 2018. And the Senate Russian investigation seeks to interview Jill Stein. The big question, will they find out where that money went for the recounts?
Straight cash money business, Green Party, what?
Green for a reason.
I will take that recount money and, oh, a new organic hot tub. Sorry.
Organic hot tub. All this and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen. There's still time, but it seems unlikely. When we've been talking about this tax bill for an extended period of time now, and throughout that, more or less unanimous in these parts that the tax bill was going to pass because this is why you become a Republican politician. Granted, yes, some become a politician because they're upset that EPA regulations prevent them from using horribly toxic stuff to kill insects, like Tom DeLay in his pest business. Others become Republican politicians because they resent unions for seeking fair wages and safety measures at their hotels or their mining companies. But the real reason to be a Republican lawmaker is to enrich yourself and your friends. And that means tax cuts. So the idea that they wouldn't figure out a way of getting there was pretty far-fetched. With that said, you know, and Joe Manchin, I think, was doing reports saying, you know, I was gettable. But nevertheless, the Democrats held together, which is fairly impressive, at least when you look at the history of these things. And that may be a function of Donald Trump and the uniqueness that is Donald Trump. Now, with that said, I'm about to play one of the most disturbing videos you might see.
This is really messed up. Like, you don't watch it if you have a weak stomach.
Look. The idea of Donald Trump being an animatron, that I think most people can get over. But the idea of seeing of the the manifestation of where he fits into our history is really the most disturbing part. The idea of a, even if it's an animatron, of Abraham Lincoln looking
She was an eating machine, total fatty.
At Donald Trump is just so disturbing.
Wouldn't that be great if the secret history of Lincoln was that he got assassinated at the theater because he was in a feud with one of the actresses and he was like there to call her fat,
right,
heckler, and her butt.
here is Donald Trump's animatron. Where is this? Is this in Disney? This is in Disney? At the Hall of Presidents.
Oh, God.
Where's Obama, for God's sake?
From the beginning, America has been a nation defined by its people. At our founding, it was the American people who rose up to defend our freedoms and win our independence. It is why our founders began our great Constitution.
Pause it. I know I'm projecting, but every single other robot up there is looking at him going like, I can't effing believe we're on the same stage with this guy. I mean, you look at the faces of all of them. They're all looking at him like, what? Seriously? Who the hell let this dude in here?
This has to be a joke.
Come on. Oh, my God. I don't think I'm human. Go ahead. Continue.
Constitution with three very simple words. We the people. Since that moment, each generation of Americans has taken its place in the defense of our freedom, our flag, and our nation under God. These are the achievements of the American spirit, the spirit of a people who fought and died to bring the blessings of liberty to all our people. Above all, to be American is to be an optimist, to believe that we can always do better.
Oh my God.
And that the best days of our great nation are still ahead of us.
You've got
it's
to be kidding.
To serve as the President of the United States, to stand here among
Alicia
so many
Machado was an eating machine.
And to work on behalf of the American people.
You just expect the Lincoln robot to turn around to everybody and go, "Gentlemen, pull out your revolvers." Boom, and they all shoot themselves in their robot brain heads.
It's come to our attention that he only used that language about Rosie.
The bit about our best days are still ahead of us seem a bit resistancy, like they're sneaking him in there for him to say it a little.
Yes,
bit.
Like, don't worry, I will someday be
the
sitting
people
in
protect,
the back.
Exactly. The people protect. It's like Obama's exit speech,
right,
basically.
Right.
Where what? Where is Obama?
That's Obama, like, literally.
The
like,
Obama robot was just
said,
like,
I can't handle it.
I'm leaving. Hey. Goodbye. Get me to the Richard Branson robot island.
If this is what convinces the robots to rise up and overthrow the government and implement space communism, I am all for it.
You do get the sense, though, that like in like Westworld, like all of a sudden, like one of them's just going to look down and go, oh, my God, we're robots. Wait, what is going on? This can't
the
be
humans
real.
Humans have allowed this man to become their leader.
That's not possible. It doesn't make sense.
Or the other thing I think of when I watch this is we're all going to die.
Yes. Hey, folks, support from today's show comes from Health IQ. Health IQ believes that the best way to improve the health of the world is to celebrate the health conscious through social and financial rewards. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. Like saving money by being a good driver, Health IQ gets you lower rates on life insurance for living a health conscious lifestyle. That was the problem. When I bought my health insurance, I think I was only like 5 years out from smoking. Or maybe I was less than five. And you need to be like 5 or 10 out. But so if you're super, if you actually take care of yourself, this is a great situation for you. Physically active people have a 34% lower risk of all-cause mortality, 56% lower risk of heart disease, 22% decrease in cancer mortality compared to people who remain inactive. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com healthiq.com/majority. Or you mention the promo code majority when you talk to a Health IQ agent. That's Health IQ, spelt like the word health, and then the letters I and Q, .com/majority to get your free quote. All right, folks, just a heads up, we're going to be live, you know, the next 3 days, 4 days. And then next week, we're going to be doing our best ofs. If you have a best of suggestion, email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put in the subject line best of. If you have like, oh, I have four great, you know, clips from YouTube that I want to be on a best of, send those. If you think that there's a particular interview, do that. Whatever your idea of what should be on the best of, send it to us, but send it to us quick because Matt's got a lot of work to do.
He's starting it today, so you better get him in.
You better get him in. Don't mess with that. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Your support is what makes this show possible. Head over to Join the Majority Report at jointhemajorityreport.com. Oh, and folks, speaking of which, hello, we have a new website.
It looks really good.
Now, before you get on, you know, before you start the nattering nabobs of negativity, we know that a lot of the stuff is not filled in. In fact, very little of it is filled in beyond the actual episodes and whatnot. But you can sign in super easy. There's a We Are Live button. And if you're a member, you'll see member stuff. Matt is signed in as a member right now. So you see the member stuff.
There's a picture of you looking happy.
There's a picture of me looking very surprised that the website is done. You can see we got a new logo, so we're going to start to use the new logo. You can see the favicon. Open up another, just to go to another page, Matt, on your browser. Your browser up top. Yeah, just go to like Google or whatnot. And you can see we got a favicon. See the new favicon? See that? Right there. Huh? It's a little small, but that's because it's a... But you will see, we'll have a new favicon. We're probably going to put that on Twitter. And then it thanks you for being a member, gives you opportunity to scroll down there, Matt. We'll show the first page. There's some recent episodes. So we got four of the most recent episodes. We may end up a little bit more, but you can just click and it'll click that button down there. More episodes. Go ahead. Watch what happens. And we're going to number those. So it takes you to the whole episode page. You keep going. Go back to the home page by hitting the middle button there. Yeah. And then you can scroll down and you'll see recent videos. I don't know what happened there. Where'd they go? On the, that's weird. That should be maybe for members. You can't see it. I'm not sure why. But Countable, that gives you an opportunity to go directly. We've made a deal with them so you can send a video. You can send any type of message to your senators. And if you click on that, it'll take you to House Things.
Oy, even more messages. Oh, my God. All these Meshuggah constituents.
You can get the free majority app. You just click on that. And if somebody knows how to use Photoshop and could put an image of our app in there, I tried to do it, but I couldn't switch the angle around. I didn't know how to do that. And then the newsletter, which we're going to get going in 2018. Jamie, right? Jamie, we're going to do a little newsletter stuff.
Totally.
And...
yeah, exactly.
She just found out about that. And then you go down there, and we're going to have an FAQ. It's going to be great. Sponsors list and about. Look, go over to the about page. Look what we got there. This is one of my favorite things. We roll down. We're going to have more there. And then you can see all the producers. And then go scroll down. You can see Brendan's picture I put in right there. It's actually Saul. So Saul's considerably older than that now, but... And then we're going to have friends of the show. So we're going to have some of our friends of the show there.
Like Mike Cernovich.
Now, none of that stuff on the Contact Us works yet. But so, just give us a little time. We're going to populate it during the break, but I want to get it up there. Thank you so much to Sean and to Kyle, of course.
Thanks, Kyle.
Kyle.
Kyle's the best.
Unbelievable.
Kyle's a great man.
Unbelievable. All right, quick break. When we come back, David Dayan will join us. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure and an honor to welcome this next young man on the program. He is the author of Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud, which is out in paper book today and still is the definitive piece of writing, in my estimation, on a major aspect of the 2008 financial crisis and really its wake. David Dayan, welcome to the program. It makes a great stocking stuffer.
That's right. Thank you for noticing that. That the holidays aren't complete without discussing the several million people that lost their homes after the financial crisis.
And I would say also, I mean, and It's going to be back in the news. I feel like you go down to Puerto Rico and write another book about what's going to happen there in 2018,
it's,
I think, in terms of foreclosure.
I would just say that it's on my radar.
There you go. and let me also give you just one more compliment before we get into any number.
I'll allow that.
Okay. For Ring of Fire, I interviewed Ryan Cooper, and the other day, Michael on the Michael Brooks Show interviewed Matt Brunig in part on, and I heard these guys on Chapo Trap House too, talking about a report they put out about foreclosure. And in both the interviews I heard from Ryan Cooper, at least, he credited you, and rightly so, because I can read that report and about 85% of it is stuff that I know because I have, and exclusively know because I've read what you have been writing over the past, I don't know, 6 years now, more, 7, 8 years. So, my compliments to you. And I think, you were duly recognized as being the authority on this stuff. And so I just want to say that, and just the book is something that I think really, if people are looking for a book to give to people to understand the wake of the crisis and why there are people who criticize the Obama administration's handling of banks and the financial industry, this is as good a place as any to start. So,
I appreciate that. And the entire point of the book in many ways, was to make sure that the issues that occurred at that time didn't go down the memory hole. And so I was gratified to see Matt and Ryan's report and how, you know, this idea has become more and more of the conventional wisdom rather than just sort of the radical scribblings of one guy who's, you know, paying attention to a certain sector of the economy. It definitely made me feel like, you know, what I've been doing for years and trying to, you know, elevate the concerns of homeowners who are normally invisible in these policy debates. It made me feel like it was worth it in some small way.
Yeah, and I think it's going to have real implications with what's going on in Puerto Rico. And maybe we can touch on that just briefly in a bit. But I also think, you know, people over the next like 3 or 4 or 5 years, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, are going to see more of people referencing back to your work, because this is, I mean, hugely relevant to explain a lot of different things that's going on in our society. But let's talk about the tax bill, because it is going to the floor today. It is going to get voted on in the floor
of the House.
Right. And the House is going to vote for it, as far as we can tell. And it appears like the Senate, it's hit the floor today. It's going to be voted on tomorrow. And it appears like the Senate is going to vote for it. I don't know, unless Bob Corker decides like, hey, wait a second, this is a bad look for me. Ah, I'm just kidding.
Well, what's funny is that it just doesn't appear that Corker's vote is determinative. That, you know, it's right now, it seems like every Republican who's available is going to vote for it, which makes it a 51-48 score. If Corker just stuck to his guns, it would be 50-49. But this is how perverse this is, that Mitch McConnell seems very preoccupied in getting one more than the margin of victory needed for this bill to rebut this idea that Doug Jones wasn't seated and that's how they got this thing through, or to spare his members from being the deciding votes. It's just this nonsense, you know, political stuff that is leading Corker to have to endure this and really ruin his reputation after he had rehabilitated it to some degree just by bashing on Trump.
But, you know, to foam that runway, he's going to be making several million dollars more for voting.
I'm sure
yay.
You talked to Mr. Sirota, who has done fine work on this point. But I wrote something for the New Republic about this. And yes, there's the millions of dollars. And that's certainly, you know, a motivating factor. And has been a motivating factor sort of through the career politically of Bob Corker, who's been, you know, called out for insider trading. And there's an open ethics investigation into Bob Corker for this. This is nothing new for him. But it's also kind of a greater thing. It's almost that, you know, there's a group in Washington of ex-staffers, ex-politicians, hangers-on, the kind of people that get on blue ribbon panels and commissions, and they get to speak at think tanks, and this whole world of policy influencers outside of government. And it's clear that in order to become, you know, this eminence grise of Washington, you have to play ball with the issues that both Washington wants, and particularly that the corporate donors who finance this activity want. And so for Corker, voting for this bill sets him up for his post-political career. You know, I've seen some people question, well, why would Republicans vote for this bill that's so unpopular? It's not going to help them in the midterms. It's not going to help their employment prospects. Not as politicians, but certainly as lobbyists and as consultants and as, you know, people in this sort of world that Jeff Conaton, the writer who was a former lobbyist, former chief of staff, called the blob. You know, Corker wants to be part of the blob, and the way to do that is you play ball when you're in that position to vote on something that is important to the blob.
Connaughton was Kaufman's was he Kaufman's chief of staff?
Yes.
Okay, so Kaufman, just for people to recall, Kaufman was the chief. Was he chief of staff to Biden? Kaufman was,
yeah. And then so Connaughton was the sort of accidental senator after Biden left. He came in for 2 years as the replacement to Biden, but he knew he wasn't going to run, and so he didn't have to abide by any of the.
He was a little bit Bullworthy. If I recall.
Right. He didn't have to worry about the credit card companies in Delaware because right. He didn't have to, he's never going to face re-election. So they, and Connaughton was his chief of staff, and they were essentially co-senators, to be honest. They decided that they were going to go after these issues that had been sitting around for some time, particularly around financial issues. That both of them were very interested and involved in. They came up against a wall. They realized that they couldn't get anything done, even though their party was in power and in control in Washington. Now, what they realized is that the blob was more powerful than even a majority in the Senate. And so I think the Corker thing is interesting in that context. Because it's not even that they need his vote, but he needs them more than they need him.
Right. Interesting. So he was just looking for a way back home on some level, and it was ended up being paved with gold, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean that certainly helps. I'm not discounting the fine reporting that Sirota has done.
Right.
Not only and apparently today it's not only Corker, but it's his chief of staff who also holds a lot of these LLCs that invest in real estate and would seek to benefit from this last minute provision. It's just it's a larger thing. And of course, the other point that should be made is that there's no way to distinguish these days between the political class and the donor class. It's the same class. They're completely aligned. Our politicians are richer and richer because you can't get elected in some ways without being rich, because you have then not only can you self-fund, but you have access to donor networks that people who don't travel in those circles don't have. As of 2013, the average net worth of a member of Congress was over $1 million. And so, you know, the average member of Congress is a millionaire, which is about 18 times the average net worth within the country. And when you have members of Congress debating how to give tax cuts to the rich, they're necessarily going to be debating how to give tax cuts to themselves.
Right. I mean, you know, this is the thing is that there, from time to time, we get libertarians who call into this program who are under this sort of notion that somehow the problem with the federal government is that it's just too big, that the amount of in their portfolio is too large, and they always talk about local control. And it's been my experience having lived in various different sized cities, from 10,000 people to 160,000 to now obviously a massive city, but on the local level, the most local level, you're in a Republican area, your local representatives or electeds perceive government as simply a tool in which they use to do business. And so it
right.
is, I'm going to get my friends a low-cost community development loan, and I'm going to, you know, use this to parlay into my ability to get, I mean, it's this sort of like low-level corruption. And on some level, we have seen, I mean, I think there's always been this, but like you say, there was always sort of like, oh, I'm going to pay a politician to do my bidding. But we've now sort of seen somehow these politicians going in and very much having that same attitude on a federal level, like I can actually wrangle this thing to help my business. And that is a,
right.
That is an amazing, that virus that happens on a local level, that level of corruption seems to have been able to metastasize into the federal government.
And I'd say it's a change even from a few years back. You know, one thing I reference in that piece is that, you know, we've heard about kickbacks before, right? I mean, during the healthcare debate, very famously, there was this thing called the Cornhusker kickback,
right?
Where Nevada Senator Ben Nelson was allegedly, you know, sort of paid off for his vote. By the way, that ended up coming out of the bill because Democrats have a sense of shame that Republicans don't. But the Cornhusker kickback was about increasing funds for Medicaid for the state of Nebraska.
Yes.
It wasn't for Ben Nelson.
Right.
It was for his constituents.
Right, right. It was like, I brought home pork for my, wouldn't even call it pork. I mean, it's like, I brought home actually really healthy vegetables.
For the poorest people in the state of Nebraska. Not for just Bob Corker, one of the richest people in the state of Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, that change is amazing. And on some level, like, I think you could probably poll people and more people. And you know, kudos to Sirota, like you said, for coining that Corker kickback. But, I mean, on some level, it's like, it's almost like a bribe.
It's in fact what the Supreme Court said is the only actionable kind of bribery that they would look at.
Right.
They would have to see quid pro quo relationships where money and votes were trading hands very directly. So this is like sort of the only kind of bribery that you're even allowed to prosecute at this point. Not that I think it's going to be prosecuted, but it's almost directly what the Supreme Court said was the most egregious kind of offense.
Right. This is more of a Corker quid quo than a kickback. But all right. So it's going to be law of the land. And I want to get to the hopeful note you strike in a minute. But just briefly, in terms of an overview, just give us, like, conceptually, what are we looking at here? Because obviously people are going to plug in. I think there's like calculators now. Will people find out if they've made, you know, if their taxes are going up or going down? We can say that at the very least, some of the most egregious increases in taxes, and you'll explain this from a conceptual standpoint, that this is actually $6 million worth of tax cuts and $6 trillion dollars in tax cuts and $4 trillion in new taxes in a way. Some of those new taxes were not the graduate student taxation of basically the services in kind they get from universities.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things around this, but this bill was supposed to be tax reform, right? That you would lower the rates, but you would get rid of all these deductions and you would reform the tax code and make it simpler. Almost all of those deductions stayed. Almost all of them remain. Some of them cut back to a certain degree, but all of them really still a feature of the tax code. So there's no simplification at all. It ended up just being a big tax cut to corporations and, those inherited beneficiaries of dynastic wealth. Those are really the two leading classes that end up getting something out of this. And in addition to shareholders and investors who are already seeing the benefits of this. I wrote a story at The Intercept showing that just in the 10 days since the Senate passed the tax bill, which was really sort of the indication that this thing was going to pass, corporations have announced $70 billion in what are known as stock buybacks. And what that means is they use corporate money to buy back shares of stock, which has through supply and demand, has the factor of artificially increasing the stock price. And that benefits shareholders, and it also benefits executives, who are usually some of the biggest shareholders in the company, because that's how they get a lot of their compensation.
People should understand that buybacks prior to the Reagan administration, buybacks were not legal. They were seen as stock market manipulation because you are artificially taking...
It's artificial enrichment.
It's artificial enrichment.
Absolutely.
And now, between that and capital gains taxes is, you know, a guy like Bill Lozonik. And maybe we'll play one of those in our best ofs, even though we didn't talk to him this year. Bill Lozonik from UMass has outlined, has been the fundamental corruption of corporate governance in the past 40 years. Those two things.
And what's so interesting is they've been, buybacks have actually been going down for the last 2 years amid the uncertainty of whether this tax bill is going to pass. But the day it passes, they immediately start announcing these huge buybacks. There was about $1 billion a day in buybacks for the last 2 years prior to December 2nd, when the Senate passed its tax bill. Since December 5th, from December 5th to the 15th, there's been $5 billion a day. So it's a fivefold increase in the level of buybacks just since this has happened. And it's a pure transfer of the money that they're getting back from the tax bill into the hands of shareholders. Just
Wait,
a pure leap.
This is impossible because I know that money is coming to hiring hordes of new workers who are going to expand our tax base.
Maybe they're going to do both at the same time. I mean, we could still hold out hope that not all the money.
All those shareholders who have their increased value in their shares, including the CEOs and the board of directors, and those might be the most important people involved in this equation. They, of course, when they get that new money, it's going to be taxed at a much lower rate. Some of them may even set up these pass-throughs. Explain to us about the pass-throughs, because do we know what kind of pass-throughs?
So a pass-through is really just any business that is not deemed a corporation, what is known as a C corp. So it could be small businesses, it could be your local laundry or dry cleaner or convenience store. And it also is rich people who have partnerships or limited liability companies, law firms, hedge funds, private equity firms,
podcast
who just
hosts,
set this up.
Podcast hosts,
podcasters, Cedar LLC.
S corp. I'm an S corp.
Freelance journalist. I'm certainly considering it. You know, people who, you know, take this corporate form in a way to you know, and move that through the individual tax code. Now, what they do on pass-throughs in this bill is they say, okay, if you're a pass-through. You're going to get a 20% deduction off the top on the first, I think, $500,000 of your income. The stated idea is to make small businesses equivalent in terms of their tax cut to the corporations, who get a huge tax cut from 35% to 21%. So that's the stated idea, that, we need to do this 20% deduction so that small businesses get the same kind of benefit that corporations do. In reality, because it's so leaky and anyone can sort of become a pass-through, anyone that earns income in any way, it's just an invitation to game the tax code, whether by making yourself a corporation entirely, because those get hell of a good benefit. I mean, you know, what's the difference between the individual income, the top rate being 37% and the corporate rate being 21%. We haven't had that kind of a maximal discrepancy before. So that's going to push people, you know, the loophole could be just becoming a corporation or becoming a pass-through, and taking advantage of this 20% deduction. So this is just going to be a massive way for accountants, people who can afford accountants, who aren't, you know, the sales clerk or the office worker, to game the system.
In terms of SALT, where are we on that? The estate, mm-hmm. the property taxes, you can now only deduct the first $10,000, which for most people...
Well, it's actually a little different than that.
Okay.
So it's basically there's a cap on state and local taxes that you can deduct of $10,000. And that could be property taxes or that could be state and local taxes. So if you're a renter and you have no property taxes to pay, you can still get $10,000.
I see.
In deduction in that. So that changed a little bit. It's still going to be pretty significant in terms of the money that people are going to have to, you know, lose in terms of that deduction in high tax states like New York and California. However, there's a total way to game that system too, that I've been hearing about that I'm pretty certain that at least California is going to put into place. And the way that you do that, at least for wage earners, is that you eliminate the individual tax, income tax on wage earners, and you make it what is called an employer-side payroll tax. The difference being that employers can take the deduction. That has not changed. Employers can take a deduction for state payroll taxes. So it will look no different to the individual. They will get less money in their paycheck, but it will be the same as paying the state income tax, which they will not have to pay anymore. And the corporation can take that deduction off the top. So it's just there's a way to game that system too. Huh. So it's not just individual rich people who are going to be gaming the system, and so are state governments.
Which is always a good mark of it's always a mark of a good piece of legislation where there is like before the thing is even passed, there's already like a multiple cottage industries around how you just you game it, right?
Absolutely. But as I wrote like about a week ago, I think that's probably intentional, right? I mean, they want to invite people to minimize their tax burden and take away this money because they want a smaller state. They want the thing to be a leaky boat because then they can justify part two of this game, which is to severely limit social spending. And the effect of that is a massive transfer of wealth upward because the people gaming the system are not the poor. And the people who benefit from social spending are not the rich. So that's the game.
83%, I think it is. I saw Vox write up, and it's and maybe people can quibble whether it's 83% or 80%. But 83% of the tax benefits to this, in other words, the gains, go to the top 1% in this bill. That's impressive, because they slapped this thing together, and they probably had no sense. They probably thought like we're just going to end up giving 70% of the gains to the top 1%. But I imagine that there's a lot of excitement that they were able to reach 83% of the gains going to the top 1%. And so there's two scenarios, right, that come out of this, and you've written about one of them. And I want to talk about that. But one scenario is, like you say, this is all set up to be, if not revenue neutral, to be revenue neutral after 10 years when everything gets when all the tax cuts for middle class people get rolled back, essentially.
Yes.
And the corporate ones remain
right.
Because of, and this has to do with reconciliation. Just trust us on this, folks. But 10 years out, so the deficit will get even larger. I don't know about you, but I suspect that you and I have a similar perspective on the deficit as not being as problematic as sold to us because of things like modern monetary theory. However, it still becomes a political tool to be used to cut social services, like you say, in particular things like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, as we're seeing it being done in this case. We haven't even touched on the 13 million people who are estimated to be losing health insurance. And I imagine the people are going to be paying more because of the lack of the mandate. So one scenario right. is that we start to they immediately start their project of cutting Social Security and other social insurance and programs. The other scenario that you've written about is once we get a Democratic majority in the House and the Senate and a Democrat in the White House, there is a unique opportunity here. Talk about the positive thing before we go back to the negative there.
So I do believe that the unpopularity of this bill and the fact that that split that you talked about, $6 trillion in tax cuts financed by $4.5 trillion in new taxes, provides an opportunity politically, if not, you know, in the financial terms, and you reference MMT, to say, here's what we're going to do. We are going to repeal the Trump tax cuts. And when we repeal the Trump tax cuts, we're going to take the money saved from repealing the Trump tax cuts and put it into $3 billion of new programs, whether that's $1 trillion of new programs, whether that's free college or a universal basic income or financing universal health care on the single payer variety, you know, something. And I think every single 2020 presidential candidate is going to have a plan like that. They're going to have a plan like that. Because this is the box sort of that Democrats always get themselves into. And it's not a box just rhetorically speaking, but part of it is legal. I mean, there's this bill, this law called PAYGO. And because of the PAYGO law, all new spending or new tax cuts has to be financed in some way by offset.
Pay as you go. Pay as you go.
Pay as you go.
Right.
And apparently they're going to waive PAYGO because they cut this thing by $1.5 trillion. But you know they need Democratic help to actually waive that. And presumably, if the situation were different and the tables were turned, Republicans wouldn't help to waive PAYGO because right. then they would get automatic cuts to social spending.
Why are Democrats waiving PAYGO for this?
Because it would institute automatic cuts to Medicaid, for example. So, if you don't want that, you need to not waive it.
Okay.
And that will happen. By the way, that hasn't happened. That would happen after the fact. There would need to be a new bill to waive these effects under the Budget Act. So, and we'll see what happens with that. And it might be an opportunity to, who's going to be hurt by that. Right.
Right.
So, but my point is that this is a way out of the box. Donald Trump just created trillions of dollars in offsets that can be used simply by reversing the estate tax changes, reversing the pass-through changes, reversing the corporate tax cuts. Those three things alone gets you probably $2.5 trillion. And that can be put toward, real tangible benefits within society. And,
so theoretically,
and that's the thing I think can happen and will happen.
Kristen Gillibrand or Cory Booker or Kamala Harris or Bernie Sanders can
right.
sit up there and say, we're going to undo Trump's legacy of his tax cuts. And not only that, free college. Or not only that,
and
everybody's going to have health insurance. That I mean,
and this
thank
shouldn't
you, Donald
be
Trump.
Something they could do, right? It shouldn't be something they could do. It should be something we should demand them
right.
to do. That this, because what happened the last time we had a situation like this? The Bush tax cuts, which sunsetted, much like the individual rates in the Trump tax cuts. And what happened in 2010? They pushed them out another 2 years. And then in 2012, they basically made them all permanent, except for on the very, very top
yep.
of the individual rate. And there certainly weren't any social programs that came back. as a result of that, mainly because you got rid of, you accepted virtually all of the tax cuts. So Democrats don't have a great track record here of not only reversing the worst abuses of the previous administration, but using them in a way to promote their own agenda. And that's what I'd like to see happen, and that's why I think should be demanded.
And this is why also people have to be aware of the way that the deficit's going to be used when this argument is put forth, because our candidate, whoever that candidate is, and whoever the hour is going to be saying, we're going to roll back the Trump tax cuts, and with it we're going to get single payer health care. Everybody's going to have health insurance. Boom. That's it. End of story. And then the argument's going to be, we can't afford to do that. We need to roll back the, and I don't know who's going to say this. Maybe it's Joe Biden, right? I don't know. I'm just using him as a proxy. Is going to say, we do need to roll back the Trump tax cuts because the deficit has exploded. And we're going to need to fund the deficit.
We can't allow that. Can't allow that.
That is something people have to, and that's why, like, attacking the notion, that's why it was so tricky to see Democrats say the problem with these tax cuts is it's going to explode the deficit, because that you are constructing the gallows. Right. They're going to hang, free college or single payer on, 5-10 years out.
I saw somebody today, absurdly, after Paul Ryan announced that he would include this $81 billion supplemental to deal with all of the horrible disasters that we've been having around the country, whether in Puerto Rico or in wildfires here in California, that was a travesty, because that's going to explode the deficit. This is a problem now. We're not allowed to provide resources after a disaster for our own country because of deficit considerations. That's a problem now. The problem was not mitigating the effects of climate change that we knew would cause this kind of behavior and this need for resources. So yes, we have to be very cognizant of the real deficits that we have, the deficits of people not having access to healthcare, the deficits of people not having electricity in Puerto Rico after 3 months, or the deficits of improper clean drinking water. Those deficits are the ones that we need to solve, not arbitrary numbers on the balance sheet that the Federal Reserve can with a couple keystrokes alleviate to a certain degree.
Joe Walsh, that lunatic who used to be a congressman from Illinois, tweeted out, one more thing to remember about this tax bill. The tax cuts for corporations is permanent. Tax cut for you is temporary. That sounds like a good Democrat commercial in 2018. He doesn't know how to use adjectives. It's Democratic commercial in 2018. And it should be.
That's true. But that's completely true.
Yep.
And by the way, here are the two things on the individual side that are permanent. There are only two things that are permanent in this bill.
State
on
tax.
The individual side of the tax cut. No, that's not permanent. The individual mandate repeal.
Right.
And something called chain CPI.
Oh, right.
Now, what is chain CPI? These are the two things that are permanent. Chain CPI is a difference in how inflation is calculated, and that difference will be applied to brackets. The tax brackets, which change every year based on the cost of living. And if those brackets go up more slowly, then you get pushed into a higher bracket more quickly as you get raises. Because if your raise is above the cost of inflation, as calculated by this slower chain CPI, you're more of your money is going to be taxed at a higher rate. And we see in the bill that over the first decade, this starts slowly and it's almost imperceptible, but it's hundreds of billions of dollars over the first 10 years. And even more so after that, because this just gets bigger and bigger and bigger over time. Now, CPI we last heard about. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, but the only group that it does not impact are the people who are the top income earners because they're,
right, because their
they're already
can't
in the
change.
Top bracket.
At a certain level, they're at the top bracket right. already. So, that money can't change.
It is basically a regressive, it's like a slow regressive tax policy, if you will, just sort of like clawing yes. back. Yes.
It's a tax increase on the middle class and the poor. And the entire point of that is to get that into the government code
yep.
so that it can be said, well, why don't we apply chain CPI across the whole of government, including to Social Security? Because the way it works when you put that inflation adjustment into Social Security is it cuts Social Security benefits. And this is something that very famously President Obama suggested in 2011. And you'll be sure to hear about that in coming years. And it's something that progressives and liberals fought and eventually won on this issue. But this is a Trojan horse within this tax bill to use as an argument that we should apply chain CPI across the whole of government.
Right. All right. Well, so David, this is the tax bill. We will be hearing more about its implications as we go on, I guess, or maybe 6 weeks from now, we will never talk about it again because there will be so much other crap going on. I mean, either honestly, like that just seems to
Here's
be
something.
the way it is now, right?
Yeah, well, that's true to a certain extent. But here's something very interesting about the tax bill is how are people going to see this in 2018, which, you know, prior to the midterms? Remember that the tax bill begins in 2018, but that means the taxes you do in April will have seen none of this. None of the tax, those changes will be applicable to 2017 taxes. So how is this going to affect people in 2018 when they're going to the polls that November? And the answer is withholding, right? Because the way it works for wage earners is that some money is withheld for the federal government. Now, who comes up with that? Well, in the bill, it says they actually don't have to change withholding for 2018. It's not mandatory. They only have to do it by 2019. The IRS has said, we're going to change withholding and we'll show it to you sometime in January or February. Who's running the IRS right now? A Trump loyalist who was not confirmed by the U.S. Senate, who Steve Mnuchin appointed. He's a guy who was the assistant secretary for policy within the Treasury Department. His name's David Cotter. He's a former executive with Ernst & Young, a big auditing firm. And he's the guy now who's going to have the authority to decide how much people are going to see this tax break or this tax bill in their daily lives, in their paychecks on a weekly basis. It's going to be this one guy who wasn't confirmed by the Senate.
And so
he's an appointee.
And what do you anticipate he's going to do? He's going to...
It's unknown what he's going to do because, I mean, that you have to change the withholding. They changed this in such a way that you used to get a personal exemption, right? So, like,
right.
You know, you'd have to put a number down.
Right.
I have one dependent. I have two dependents. That's gone. That's not part of the system anymore. They doubled the standard deduction.
So most wage
allegedly supposed to cover for that.
Right. So what does that mean, though? I mean, what does that
mean? It means that the calculation is kind of a secret sauce. We don't know how he comes up with these numbers. What it could mean is that, you know, they will use that policy of withholding to take much less out of the average paycheck, and people will have the feeling that they have made much more money over the course of the year. Then in 2019, in April, when it gets clawed back. So that could happen. I mean, that could absolutely happen, and it would be an artificial way to boost economic activity, to boost the take-home pay of workers during an election year.
Let me just see if I've got this right, because now I think I understand it. right now, when you go and you get your W-2 wages, you fill out the form and you say, I'm going to take, I got a kid. I got, I'm going to school. So you put down the numbers in there. You do your itemized deductions, and they will, the higher the number is, the less they take out of your paycheck. Because of the doubling of the standard deductions, far less fewer people are going to do that. And I imagine
it's not that less people are going to do that. It's that it's not even applicable anymore. It's like, I have two dependents. Well, so what? That is not a determination of your tax bill anymore. So they need to change that. But the way in which they change that is susceptible to political meddling.
So in other words, they can say, like, look, we don't do it that way anymore. Just assume we're going to give you the full, no deductions, let's just say. I mean, maybe that's an extreme case, but no deductions.
Right.
And you're like, oh, man, I got a lot more money in my pocket. But when April comes around, it's going to be, you didn't take any deductions, but we still tax you. We're going to take
April is conveniently located. Right. April 2019 is conveniently located 5 months after the election. Another thing that's in this bill is that there are extreme incentives for corporations to purchase equipment and engage in investment in 2018. It pulls all of this forward because the benefits in 2018 are much stronger than the benefits in succeeding years. That seems unduly political to me as well, that it's trying to artificially create economic activity within 2018.
Right.
You put those two together and you could see positive economic statistics, which will obviously be used by the Trump administration to say that the tax cuts worked. And you'll see that blared across screens all through between here and the election.
Interesting. So basically, mortgaging, people are taking a loan from the future and they don't necessarily realize it is what it comes down to.
Right. Right.
And all right. Well, I mean, I guess we will have a better sense of this when they roll out the new rules in 2018. It'll also be interesting to see, frankly, if that makes a difference. Because I have a feeling.
I'm not sure it will.
I'm not sure it will either. I mean, because I think this electorate that we've at least seen in 2017 come out seems to be unmoved by economic situation. That may not.
I agree.
And that it's really there are much bigger issues, which is.
I agree. I think people have made up their minds on Trump. I think economically, the biggest thing that's been touted by the administration is the increase in the stock market, which, to much more than half of the electorate means nothing.
Right.
And so whether a small bit of take home pay increase, I mean, it can't be that much, whether that matters at all. I mean, we saw in 2009 and 2010, the Obama administration did this. They hid their tax cut inside withholding. And they gave people a little bit more money, and it was supposed to be this behavioral economic strategy to increase growth in the economy. And that didn't matter in 2010. People didn't even know they got a tax cut.
In 2004, I believe we all got a check from George Bush, too, $300. And that didn't, I mean, I guess he won.
Right. I don't think that necessarily is determinative, but right. I think that's part of the game.
Right.
I mean, I do think that there's an attempt to spin the economy in a certain way by pulling forward the as much economic activity and growth and circulation into 2018.
David Dan, whenever I talk to you, I feel like I have learned far more than someone at my age should in such a brief amount of time.
Too much.
Yeah, too much.
Well, Sam,
too much
thank. Thank you, and I was glad to see the reversal of fortune on the part of your detractors, and that you were able to carry through with the program that and your other activities that obviously are very important to it's why I come on here all the time, And I was glad to see and gratified to see that sanity won out in that particular instance. So yes. Congratulations to you, sir.
Thank you, David. All right. Have a great holiday. Happy New Year. And we'll see you in 2018, buddy.
Cool. We'll see you next year. All right. Bye.
Bye. All right, folks. Chain of Title. Go do yourself a favor right now. Go to MajorityReportKickback.com. Click through our book selling links to buy Chain of Title. You can get the hardcover or the soft cover. And hugely important book to understand where we've been, to understand the different motivations of why things like hemp didn't work. Also to have an understanding of what is about to hit the sort of the next tsunami, if you will, that's going to hit Puerto Rico. Massive, massive foreclosures. And you can also, the interesting piece in the New York Times that you learn about, the sort of the racket that is involved in reverse mortgages. So, do yourself a favor, Chain of Title, folks. Let's push that baby right up on the Amazon ratings.
I wonder if anybody ever said that during a marketing meeting for a David Dane book. Let's push that baby up. Let's,
you know, back in the Air America days, that's what we would do. People would come on, and by the end of the show, their book was like number two on Amazon rankings.
That's great. No, I was just thinking specifically.
Randy Rhodes could do that to a book. Big time. Big time.
I was listening to Randy's podcast the other day. I had never listened to her before.
I haven't heard her show in a long time.
She's good. It feels like listening to like real like radio that I only heard as literally like a kid. Like for real, like AM radio.
Yeah.
But she seems very smart.
She's a smart woman. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. Reminder, tonight is TMBS. Insert your own joke. That is the Michael Brooks Show.
Mm.
Tonight, Adolph Reed, Will Menaker will be on the program. Is that it? Just two guests?
That's usually just two guests.
Usually you have like seven guests. Last week you had like six guests.
Last week I had three guests.
More than three. Four.
Wrong.
There's a few surprises.
There's a few surprises? Is that right?
Sure, let's go with that.
TMBS, 7 p.m. live. You can check it out either streaming on the shiny new website that we have or via the app or on YouTube. We're going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number.
By the way, Sam, we're going to play that Pajama Boys mix.
Oh, we're going to play the Pajama
Boys? As a break, yeah.
Okay.
And do you know who this was from? Because I just got that Dropbox link from you.
Oh, shoot. Really? Come on, Matt. Seriously? I can't. Darn it. I don't even know how I got it now. I'm so... I am so, still underwater from them catching up on emails, literally 1,000 emails. So I don't know. It's,
this isn't a real name, but it was Ben Dankowitz.
Is he involved? Yeah. Oh, interesting.
That's where
I think you might be right.
Hold on just one second. I think this got sent to my email as well. Let me see if I can find it. Vamp for me for a second, but yeah, it's Ben Dankowitz. Yeah, that's what I got. Ben Dankowitz. There's the song.
Okay, Ben Dankowitz. There we go. All right, and so by Ben Dankowitz, it with an assist apparently from DJ Danarchy. We'll be right back. 646-257-3920.
The future of this country cannot afford to lose a seat in the very, very close United States Senate. We can't afford it, folks. So get out and vote. get out and vote. So get out and vote for Roy Moore.
Pajama boys are back.
Hey, girls.
And the alpha males are black. Pajama boys are back.
Hey, girls.
One of our attorneys is a G.
Pajama boys are back.
Hey, girls.
And the alpha males are black. Pajama boys are back.
Hey, girls.
Steve Bannon is speechless.
I gotta tell you, I think that I have been waiting all my life, and now I just don't know what the hell to say. Said throughout this campaign that I thought that December 12th was going to be a historic day.
Pajama boys are back.
Hey, girls.
And the alpha males are black. Pajama boys are back.
Hey, girls.
They're unbelievable people.
Pajama boys are back.
Hey, girls.
And the Africans are black. Pajama boys are back.
Hey, girls.
Don't get triggered.
Snowflakes. Snowflakes. Snowflakes.